Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that brings you deep dive interviews with the motorcycle industry insiders and racers that make the sport move. I'm host Dale Spangler, and this week my guest is former Works and National Hare and Hound champion turned fly racing apparel specialist, Gary Sutherland. This episode is brought to you by Moto America. See the fastest racing on two wheels. It's Moto America Superbikes at Road America, June 2nd through the 4th, with seven classes of racing, including 190-mile-per-hour superbikes and King of the Baggers. It's fun for the whole family with available VIP packages where you can treat yourself to the ultimate fan experience and enjoy your very own climate-controlled suite with live race feed, timing, and scoring. It's Moto America Superbikes at Road America, June 2nd through the 4th. Reserve your tickets and camping spot today at MotoAmerica.com. Let's get started. Gary Sutherland, welcome to Pit Pass Moto. I think you've been on a few times in the past. Hasn't been with me yet, but how are you today and what's happening in sunny Southern California?
Doing good, Dale. Good to chat with you guys. Yeah, it's been a little bit. I've definitely been away kind of off the limelight for a while. So yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, that was, you know, a big part of why I wanted to have you on is because you are a past, you know, former champion, off-road champion, Works, Hare and Hound champion, and you've now transitioned into a role in the power sports industry. So I just kind of really wanted to talk about that a little bit, both actually. As a former champion, though, I mean, it seems like you've had a tough few years. You know, since those 2017 titles, you know, it's just been tough for you to put together a full season again. Tell us about that. How's it been?
Yeah, you know, at the end of 2017, there's a, we could have a full radio show on just the drama that kind of unfolded at the end of 17. But I think realistically, you know, the end of 17 kind of, I got a little jaded towards the industry in a way, just how that was handled and, you know, winning two championships and not having a ride. And I don't think mentally I ever got over it, you know, like I struggled a little bit. I got on, got back on KTM after I rode Suzuki's for a year, got back on KTMs and just kind of struggled, was doing stuff all on my own. And, you know, I was on the podium and I was just was struggling to get that edge to win races back to back again. And when I snapped my arm in 2020, it was kind of just ended quick. Wasn't what I was expecting. You know, I kind of wanted to do a couple more years and just kind of see where it was and, you know, do some races that I had kind of put on the map. I wanted to do five nationals and do some stuff. So it was kind of a little bit of an abrupt ending, and that all kind of just stopped quickly. And it's never fun to end your career on an injury, you know what I mean? And then I picked an Ironman last year to like just re-energize myself and do something totally different that I totally sucked at. And I started doing that, and I ended up snapping a tendon in my ankle, and I've been dealing with a bone infection now for about 6 months. Same thing that kind of ended my racing career was a bone infection. So yeah, it's been a little bit of a rough go, but keeping my head up and staying positive and back pedaling and trying to get, you know, some weight back off and get back riding.
Yeah, definitely some bad luck there. So I felt like you're coming off such a fantastic year in 2017, winning the Works and the Hare and Hound in the same year. And then you switch to, and I think everybody was excited. I was excited to see it. In 2018, you signed with Suzuki.
Yeah.
And they had this intent to jump back in and, you know, kind of bring back the Suzuki off-road program of the past.
Yep.
You know, which we know had a lot of success. And it just never really seemed to kind of happen for you there. I remember going to the Atalanta race and seeing you there. And unfortunately, just couldn't seem to keep that bike together, could you?
No, you know, it was, you know, I signed after 17, unfortunately, when I lost my ride everybody had already had their budgets full. And I called up Wheeler, and me and Chris Wheeler were chatting, and I was like, hey man, like, I don't have anything right now. Like, what do you think? And he's like, was all on board. Let's get Suzuki back on the map and off road. And, you know, I was looking at it as a, even though I signed a 1-year deal, we were both had intentions of moving forward and just building Suzuki off-road back. Probably 2 months into that program, Wheeler got hurt and wasn't able, like, I had no communication with anybody at Suzuki at that point and was kind of just on my own. I had one bike, I had two or three different motors, and I was just swapping motors in and out, and it just fell apart from there. But I stuck with it, and for the year, and I think I was 4 points down with 2 rounds to go, and I blew up the motor at Mesquite, and that basically took me from second in the championship to fifth or fourth, I think. So kind of a hard pill to swallow, because then I lost out on championship bonuses, top three bonuses, and, you know, we were that close to a title on a Suzuki, and hopefully, you know, I was wanting to move to the 18 model and get off the RMX and actually, you know, start putting in some, like, we had some good results. I came close to winning a couple races on an old bike and, like, no help. So it was a bummer to see that happen. I probably should have just swallowed a little pride at the end of 2017 and went and bought a couple KTMs or something like that and just, you know, stuck it out that year. And we all make choices, and we had bigger plans. It just didn't work out.
So then the next year, I think, you know, I felt like you were on track to really kind of come back and see if you could win that title back. And you signed with Hatch Racing, Steve Hatch, I think someone you've worked with quite a bit throughout your career.
It was actually Fred Hatch. It was Fred Hatch.
Oh, Fred Hatch. I thought it was Steve Hatch for some reason.
No, everybody got that mixed up. So Fred Hatch is he's a local guy here in Southern California, raced Big Six for years and years and years, super into the sport. He still actually to this day helps out the Three Brothers Racing team and a lot of the support Husky and Gas teams as well.
That's funny. I never knew that. I just, you know.
Everybody thought it was Steve. Yeah. Yeah. Steve got a lot of press off that.
I bet.
And I love Steve. I've worked with Steve in the past, and he's a great guy. And training with Steve was, I learned a lot from Steve when he was in Arizona.
Yeah, that's what I remember is kind of the Arizona connection. We were down there. And so, yeah, so you come back on KTMs, but then you had this ankle injury and you end up with an infection on that. And so it's just, wow, it just seemed like it was tough. You know, like I said, after that 2017 series, there seemed like there was just something that always seemed to take you out of it.
Yep. Broke my foot in 18, broke my other foot in 19. And it was just like, once I started getting momentum going, and you know how it is, like just as you get the momentum going, it's just like defeated, right? You're like, oh man, another, you know, take you out for 2-3 rounds. And they weren't big injuries. I mean, I snapped my foot. It's, you know, 6 weeks in a walking boot. Like, it wasn't anything horrible. So it's, but it still takes you out of racing. So that was a bummer.
Well, yeah. So then fast forward again to the following year, February 2020, broke your arm, got another infection. And then, of course, you know, COVID hits and it just throws a wrench in everyone's lives.
Yeah.
So what was it like during that period? I mean, were you like thinking, you know, this is the end of my career right now, or were you looking for jobs, or what were you doing?
So I snapped my arm in February, and I snapped it at the race. I didn't even go to the hospital. I just left it in the little cardboard sling and drove back, texted my doctor and said, hey, I broke my arm. Can I come see you in the morning? He's like, yeah. Took an x-ray. I'm like, cool. They're going to put a plate in it. Like, we're, you know, 6 to 8 weeks, right? I'm thinking, okay, perfect. I'm going to use this time to catch up on some training. Like, let's just keep working. Let's do our thing. And then like 10 days after surgery, I ended up, that's when I found out I had an infection. And then COVID hit, and it was, then I had sponsors, like everybody, of course, didn't know what was going to happen with COVID. So most of my sponsors were all like, they just pulled out. And I understand there's no hard feelings. I get it. At that moment, it was kind of like, well, all right, I guess that's kind of like the end. And I didn't really realize it was the end until probably after like I had 8 surgeries on my arm that year. And probably after like the third or
fourth. Holy cow.
Third or fourth surgery, pick lines. It just was like, all right, this is going to take a lot longer than I expected. And I was like, it was time. But it's very hard. I think, you know, one thing a lot of people really dig into is like, you go live, like I only dreamed of racing dirt bikes my whole life, right? You go live your dream. And then when you're done doing that, people are like, oh, what are you going to do now? And you're like, huh.
I don't know.
You're like, I didn't really, unfortunately, I know this sounds really small-minded, but I wasn't thinking far enough ahead. And I was, you know, I don't think a lot of people get stuck in that because you're so focused on winning races and racing. And, you know, it's like, it's hard to fill that void once it's gone, right? You don't realize it till it's gone. And you're like, wow, I lived my dream. And people are like, oh, well, what are you going to do? And you're like, I can go do construction. I can work in the industry, but it's still like, there's still just that little bit missing. That fulfillment is just not there. And so that's, I think that's probably the biggest struggle that I've dealt with moving past my racing career, is just picking something to be that passionate about. Cause you know, when you're racing, the passion and the drive you have towards your sport is unparalleled across the board. And I'm like, I haven't found anything outside of dirt bikes that I'm like, man, I really am that passionate and have that much fun doing, right? So I think that's one of the hardest things.
Yeah, it's all consuming in my mind, because it's like, that's what you identify as a racer. And so to not be able to identify as that is a hard transition, I feel like, for a lot of racers when they get to the end of their career.
Well, and you know, off-road guys, like, it's not like you're ending your career and you got money in the bank and you're like, I'm going to sit back and invest some money and try. It's like, all right, my racing career's done. I need a job on Monday. What am I going to do? You know? So
how did you, were you kind of in discussions? I know you've been a long time, you know, on and off fly athlete, yep. WPS fly athlete. And so how did that come about? Was it something you were kind of just looking into and inquiring and just kept communications open?
Well, you know, it's funny. Actually, when I got done, I was like, you know, mentally, I was pretty over dirt bikes in a way. Like I said, I was pretty jaded after 17, and that didn't really stop. Even at 2020, I kind of still was like, you know what, I want to break. So I started a glass company, and I was doing glass, and I still have the companies. I do some on the weekend here and there. And then I did closets and garage cabinets as well, as another little company I have. And then randomly, I just talking to Chris Kiefer one day, and he's like, oh yeah, Fly's hiring this job down here in California. And I was like, really? I was like, what's it about? And he's like, I don't know. He's like, you want to talk to JT? I was like, sure. So I called JT up and was like, hey, what's going on? And one thing led to another, had a call with JT and Cole, and bam, next thing you know, I'm working at WPS. So it was just kind of happened quick. I wasn't really looking for a job in the industry, and that wasn't really my direction. The opportunity fell in my lap, and I was like, well, you know, let's get back in the industry and do something, you know? Like you said, I've been off and on with Fly and love the brand and the people there. So I was like, let's go work there.
Like you said, you never really officially retired, but you did transition. It wasn't until what? I think 2021 when you finally actually took the job with Fly and WPS. But what's your day-to-day look like in this new position?
The cool thing is, when I took the job, you know, I talked to Cole and Jeff Northrup, NorCal. He was the guy in Southern California for Fly. And the big thing is, you know, Southern California is everybody's down here, right? You have TLD and Fox and Fast House, and you have Canvas and all these gear companies. And Fly for many years is not, we can be honest, our design is not the coolest. It's not like, oh, they're the cool brand, right? So part of my job is honestly like go to the track once a week, ride your dirt bike, help out with media launches, and just be at local events and local races. And then when you're not doing that, mainly going to the dealerships with our sales reps at WPS, filling in the voids if they're missing something, chest protectors, helmets, whatever, teaching, you know, parts guys about the Fly product, you know, working on POP on the walls and window wraps and stuff like that. So basically just, I guess you could say almost like a brand ambassador slash sales slash marketing in a way, like kind of just the whole brand itself in this Southern California area, because we know how crucial it is to be present in Southern California with all the dirt bikes and motocross and everything that's just going on down here.
Yeah, it's always made sense. Even when I was, you know, had spent time there my 11 years at WPS, we always talked about having that person that's the person in the van and going to the races and having lunch with media people. And I mean, it just goes such a long ways in our industry.
That's the cool thing about our industry, is it's fun, right? Like, that's why we all do it. We're not doing it to get rich and retire early,
yeah.
Right? Like, we all enjoy doing it and enjoy dirt bikes. So that's one of those perks that I've been able to enjoy. Unfortunately, I've been hurt the last 6 months, so I haven't been able to go to the track and ride as much, but it's been nice to transition and see, you know, just fly racing on a consumer side and what's actually selling in the dealerships. And you know, it was a big mental change for me to see what's actually selling at a dealership versus what, as a racer, you would buy, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it when I see what's actually selling, price point stuff for it. And I'm like, what do you mean you're buying? Like, we have entry-level helmets, but people are like, oh, I'm going to put my kid in an entry-level helmet. And I'm like, no. Like, spend the extra money on the on a better helmet and you know, buy a cheaper gear bag. Don't buy the Jet Lawrence $500 gear bag and a $100 helmet. Like, let's swap those real quick. Let's buy a $500 helmet and a $100 gear bag, you know?
So has there been some adjustments along the way? Like I'd imagine some of the desk skills, if you want to call it that, there might have been some things to throw in there to learn a little bit, but you've always had mechanical skills. So I feel like dropping you into a role like that would be pretty easy as far as technical speak. So yeah, is there any kind of weird things that you didn't expect?
I really do think the biggest thing is the biggest kind of eye opener and hardest part was is like understanding that most of these dealerships, you know, the stuff that we're wearing or racers are wearing, $199 pant, like most consumers going into these dealerships are buying the $100 pant and the $29 jersey, you know, like they're understanding their dollar.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not just dumping it on the high-end stuff all the time. You're like, you definitely see the high-end stuff sell, but the volume of the lower level stuff is where kids are first getting into it on quads or side by side. So it was really eye opening to not be so, you know, just focused on the best stuff, right? Like having to learn like maybe a little, I wouldn't say lesser quality, but just a, you know, a price point set of boots and trying to understand where the consumer sees it, you know, and trying to relate and get that person to understand that, you know, this helmet is better and you want to put your kid in that, right? So that's probably been the biggest adjustment for me and learning, you know, map and all these little, you know, sales, the sales side of it's been a little like, oh, okay, tricky. Like I didn't understand all that at first, but you know, it's all good.
Margins and all this other stuff. Yeah. You end up doing a lot of math, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
We'll get back to the conversation in one moment, but first here's a word from our sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, you mentioned Chris Kiefer, mutual friend of both of ours, great guy. You have been doing some, you know, test riding here and there for him. And I would assume with Kiefer's technical background with gear that you guys probably talk about gear stuff all the time to where I would assume that even helps you in your day-to-day job.
Yeah, it's funny, you know, Chris, it's really funny because, you know, I've always, you know, done stuff with Chris, done media events with Chris, whether it's, you know, for him and Racer X or just, you know, hey, he's going for a Racer X one or he's going for Kiefer Inc. or whatever it is. And it's kind of funny because when I took this role with Fly, like I'm kind of Switzerland. I'm like, hey, I'm going to with Tilly to Dirt Bike Magazine and we're doing a 450 shootout. And then I'm like, hey, I'm going to Cycle News and doing this. And then I'm coming over to him and then I'm going to Swap. And he's like, dude, you can't do that. And I was like, hey, I'm not Gary Sutherland in this role. I'm Fly. I'm here to accommodate all the media. And so there's always this, like I show up and do stuff for Tilly or something. He's like, I see how it is, man. That's cool. You're out. No more Kiefer Inc. You know, so we, of course, you know, we have that banter going back and forth with each other on that. But yeah, he's really good with gear. I know, you know, his contract with FXR and all his stuff he does, like he is very technical, whether it's dirt bike or gear related. And it's always good. I like try to get him, hey, want to wear this? And he's always open to wear stuff and give feedback. So it's nice to hear. It's kind of funny too, because I've learned, you know, at a consumer level, you know, you go in and teach people about gear. A lot of times it doesn't matter. Oh, I have triple stitch this. I have this 87, you know, perforated holes in this set. It's like, people are like, okay, I don't need to know. Like it looks cool. Does it fit good? Does it feel good, right? Like sometimes I think in our industry, we get so caught up on such of the little stuff that we forget. Like people just want to ride their dirt bike, right? And if it looks good and feels good, they most of the time they just wear it, right?
Yep.
So I've learned to kind of like tone down the technical side of it and just look at it as like, hey, this design's cool. Fabric's good. Fits great. You know, like little things. Bullet points. People don't want to read as much anymore, right? Like, it's pretty funny.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about something that's a big part of your life, and that's dad life, and something I've always had a huge amount of respect for you. Just the way, you know, from the moment you brought your daughter to the races, Emery, and now you got married in 2019, and you have three kids. So talk about, you know, dad life and, you know, what that means to you. You just seem like you're such a family man.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, from, you know, rolling to the races with M and, you know, just that whole situation was, you know, crazy. And at, Em's absolutely amazing. She's 11 now, man. It's crazy. It goes by so fast. She's
unreal.
In middle school. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. You know, I think you could ask any dad and go, wow, it goes by fast. Right. And then now we have me and Christy have a 4-year-old daughter, Cheyenne. And then our little, our son's 18 months old. So
little Randy.
Yeah. Randy, you know, he's the baby boy. Oh my gosh. My wife babies him so much. I'm like, babe, you gotta let him fall a couple of times, right? You gotta let him. But I get it. It's mama's last child, and you know, it's a little boy, so he's gonna be a mama's boy for a while. But it's a lot of fun. My Emery's getting into like mountain bike racing a little bit. She's been enjoying that, so it's fun. I mean, three kids. I feel like two is like, oh hey, this is pretty. You know, it's not bad. Two's good, and three is just chaotic. Not like because one kid's bad or not. It's just there's just so much going on. Luckily, Emery, you know, being 11, really can step in and help out a lot. So it's been really, really awesome to have her. She's an amazing big sister and just, you know, helps out so much. It's awesome.
Yeah. Every time I, you know, like I see your social posts, I'm just like, your kids just seem like they're so great. You just have so much fun together. Have you found it being a little bit of an adjustment to, you know, the dad life with your professional life now?
I think I learned a lot from, you know, when I was racing for a living, I had to go get my work done. I had to go ride. I had to train. I had to work on bikes, but I didn't have help with them. So it was like at 3 o'clock when she was out of school, like I was focused on her, right? Now moving into a more professional career, as far as like, I'm very conscious about like my time with my family, like, right? Like, it's like, hey, like I want to make sure I'm home as many nights as I possibly can. I want to be there as many mornings as I can, because, you know, if you really think about it, my daughter M's 11. In 4 years, like, she doesn't want to hang out with me and my mom, me and my wife, you know, she's going to want to hang out with her friends and go do stuff. So that amount of time you get to really spend with your kids, like, I really want to make sure whatever I'm doing at this stage in my life, it allows me to spend time at home on the weekends, you know, as much as possible. I know we, you know, you have to make money to live, but having that time with the family is, you know, I think anybody can tell you it's means more than the paycheck sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it's been a transition, because I mean, let's face it, like when you're a professional racer, to race at the level that you have, I mean, you have to be selfish in some ways, you know, like you have to do, like you said, put the work in, work on the bikes, drive to the races. But I think it's interesting for Emery, just she literally like grew up in that environment and it just seemed like she enjoyed it. You know, there was lots of people that always seemed to want to jump in and, you know, like watch her during the races. And so what a unique way to grow up. And I would imagine, who knows if she'll end up doing something in the industry or racing or whatever, but it seems likely, you know, that tends to happen when you're around it your entire life.
She still rides. She rides, and we're doing some Moto for Kids races. She's really into baking right now. That's her, like, I want to be a baker, Dad. So, okay, whatever. I'm like, I always tell everybody, people like, oh, is Em going to race? Is Randy going to race? I said, hey, I want to teach all my kids how to ride a motorcycle and how to be safe. And I'm like, if they choose to race, like, I'm going to support them in it. But if they don't want to race, that's fine. Go do something else. I always want them to have the opportunity to know how to ride a motorcycle in case when they get older, somebody's like, hey, let's go to the desert or whatever. Or if we want to go ride, we can go trail ride, you know? So it's, I'm not like, oh, I want my son to race and be the next, you know, Chase Sexton, Eli Tomac, or Ricky Carmichael. I'm not one of those guys at all. I could care less. I will just want them to have fun on dirt bikes and be happy. So hopefully they enjoy riding dirt bikes, because, you know, that's part of our whole family is all about two wheels. So we'll see.
Well, regardless, if you ever do another pro race again, I'm sure, I mean, you've had so many good memories through the years. And are there a couple that stand out as just those moments that you're always going to cherish from your career, like, you know, 6 days or something like that, that, you know, what stands out?
I think the one race that stands out the most for me was 2017 Hare and Hound. There's two rounds to go. And if I won the race, I won the championship. And I remember talking to Taylor, was standing there, Ricky was standing there. And at that point, Taylor missed a few rounds. And I was Ryan Dungey-ing it. I'd won two rounds. I'd Ryan Dungey-ing it. I was like, hey, if I get second, I'm cool. I just need to be smart, right?
In it to win it.
Yep. And I remember Brabeck going, geez, you don't even have to win races anymore to win a championship. And it fired me up so bad that I left that night and Christy was in the van and I said, I'm going to destroy these guys tomorrow. I'm going to win. I'm going to kill it. I said, let's go. And I ended up winning by like 3.5 minutes the next day and won the championship. And it was so funny because after that race, my wife was like, what in the world got in? Like, do that every race. And I'm like, I would love to. I don't know what got into me, what actually made that push, but yeah, man, that was probably one of the coolest things, because everybody just thought I was gonna like lay up, get second, and just take it into Barstow at the last round and just win it, you know, with a top three. And like Kiefer, nobody showed up. Like nobody showed up to Lucerne because nobody really thought I was gonna win the championship that round. So it was kind of funny to just, you know, go out and do it the way I wanted to do it and win the championship. So
I mean, it just stamped your authority on it, and that just had to be just so rewarding, like you're saying, because it's just like there was no, you erased the questions at that moment.
Exactly. And it was, I mean, that's just one small, I mean, 6 days was huge. X Games, like getting to go to Brazil, Spain, Germany, all these places. And I mean, all the West Coast stuff. And I mean, there's so many cool memories and cool places I got to race a dirt bike. I definitely will see myself probably doing Mammoth again. I would love, if I ever got to a point where I was back in speed by shape, I'd love to do Washougal National one more time. But I just, the years keep ticking by. I keep saying it. The years just keep ticking by. And I'm like, so you never know.
Well, I always like to ask this question of my guests, because power sports just draws you in so much to where it's hard to get away from it. But if you weren't, now that you have an industry job, I feel like that's probably filling some of that two-wheel racing void. But if you weren't, is there something else, like another sector? Is there something that you think you'd be doing that would potentially fill that void?
Man, the only other thing I could think of, drive a monster truck.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, it's funny because I actually hit up a couple. I was like, man, I always wanted to drive a monster truck. I know it sounds so crazy, hillbilly, whatever, but I was like, I think that'd be fun. Like we went to Monster Jam and I was like, God, that'd be so cool to drive a monster truck. And that would be the next best thing to fill a void in racing. That, or even I told my wife, man, I would love to just get a, you know, piece of junk stock car and go to Paris on Friday nights and, you know, bash and bang around a track and something four wheels, you know?
Sounds like you need to talk to the Feld people, because the more I think about that, I just go, you would be the perfect person for monster truck, because there's no one out there that will send it as hard as you will. And you're certainly,
you got to keep them. So. No, they got to keep those monster trucks together though. I haven't had a good track record of keeping things together. So maybe that might be my only downfall.
That's true. So what's next for Gary Sutherland? Are you going to get back on the bike and doing just some local races here and there, anything like that? I saw where you kind of mentioned that you're starting to do some triathlon training. I know that's kind of I did that myself when I quit racing for a while. I did running races and road cycling to kind of distract myself. But, you know, of course, it's never the same as riding a dirt bike.
No, actually, tomorrow, I think, is going to be the first day back. I'm going to ride Glen Helen, I think, tomorrow, take the fly van out. I think it's been probably 7 months since I rode a dirt bike. So I think I'm going to get on the bike tomorrow, go for a ride, just go enjoy, have a little fun. And then I technically am signed up for a full Ironman in October, but it all kind of depends on my ankle. That's why I got injured initially a year ago, was I was just jogging, training for an Ironman, and snapped the tendon. So I'm still on heavy oral antibiotics. I literally just had a PICC line in 2 weeks ago. So
wow.
Yeah, it's been pretty rough. So I'm still on heavy oral antibiotics. I got up early this morning and went for a pedal. So I'm finally starting to get back being active. So we'll just kind of see where it ends up. I got a bicycling trip from Montana to Wyoming this summer, so that'll be fun. And for me, the next step is just being active, getting back out and being active with my family and doing the things that I used to love, you know, a year ago. So of this injury has just been holding me back. So that's probably my next real step, is just getting back.
So which of the three are you best at? Run, bike, or swim?
I'm not good at any of them. Come on, Dale. I'm not good. I'm definitely bicycle would be my, that's my strongest. I'm not a good swimmer, and right now I don't even think I can run. So it's going to be pretty ugly if I end up trying to do it in October. They were nice enough last year. I was supposed to do Arizona Ironman last year, and I didn't, because I was actually literally laying in the hospital the morning of the Ironman after a surgery. And so they gave me another entry for this year. So I picked Sacramento because it's a downriver swim. It's a flat bike and a flat run. So I was like, nice. It's the easiest one on the – and I'm like, hey, it might be ugly. It might be 15, 16 hours, but I'm like, I think I could get it done. It's more, you know, just getting the body in enough shape to get it done.
Well, Gary, really appreciate your time today. Always enjoy talking with you, and you're one of my favorite characters in the sport. And any last words before we close out this episode?
I appreciate you guys thinking about me and having me on. You know, it's always nice to get the call, say, hey, you want to chat a little? You know, it's always fun chatting dirt bikes. So I do enjoy the opportunity to chat with you guys, and look forward to doing it, you know, in the future sometime.
You're welcome on anytime. So thanks so much, Gary. Appreciate your time today. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow Pit Pass Moto on your favorite podcast listening app so you never miss an episode. And if you have a moment, please rate and review our show. We'd appreciate it. You can also follow us on social media or visit pitpassmoto.com, where you can listen to past episodes and purchase your very own Pit Pass Moto swag. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson and the production team at Wessler Media. I'm Dale Spangler. I hope you'll join us next week for another episode of Pit Pass Moto. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!